1, 2.
Welcome to Two of the Road, movies with Matt and Adam.
I'm Matt.
And I'm Adam. We're a weekly movie pairing podcast. Every week we will pick a theme, recommend a movie to the other guy he has not seen based on the theme, watch and discuss.
And we have a 25-year age difference, so we have both have a different set of movies, but we're doing a special for Oscars. And this week is the 80s, I believe, the biggest maybe robbery of the 80s.
Yeah, we're looking at all the times the Oscars effed up, which is a long and,
you know, glorious history. Right? They seem to do it every year at some point.
Yeah, we should say, like, at the top, like, we are trying to focus on movies that we have not seen at all or have not seen recently.
Right.
So maybe, like, if you're listening to this, you're like, how do they not talk about whatever? It's like, yeah, we didn't talk about that because we probably talked about it already on the show. Right. Or we've both seen it so much or love it so much that there's... Sometimes when you like something so much, there's not much to say about it, you know? You just start repeating it.
I had seen both these movies, but I hadn't seen either one since they came out. Mm-hmm. So that was 89. So.
Right.
Yeah. 88.
And so before we get started, I have I was doing a little bit of research into, like, I was like, I don't even think Do the Right Thing is my favorite movie this year. Like, so I mistakenly thought Heathers came out this year.
Yeah.
And that's why I was like, oh, that's definitely the best movie. So I started looking at what other movies came out. This is perhaps the most formative movie year of young Adam.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Can I quickly give you my... These are not the best movies.
Okay.
These are the movies that as a young Adam, like, I watched many, many times and, like, formed the way that I thought about the world.
Okay.
I'm going to go quick, but you can jump in and interrupt me if something sticks out, okay?
All right.
So, I'm starting with softcore pornography. Savage Beach, Andy Sidaris, boobs and guns. No plot, makes no sense, but
never
just
seen it.
Boobs and guns.
Never heard of it.
Yep. It's Andy Sidaris. He's got a long history of boobs and guns. Cinemax, Midnight. No Holds Barred, Hulk Hogan fighting, Zeus, Debo from Friday.
Okay.
What else do I need to say? Teen Witch, about a teen who becomes a witch.
Mm-hmm.
Dream Team, Michael Keaton, and a bunch of people from a mental hospital somehow get out and have hijinks.
That seemed to be a theme around that time.
Hijinks.
Yeah, those hijinks.
Speaking of hijinks, UHF, the Weird Al Yankovic movie, starring Kramer from Seinfeld.
Oh, never seen it.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Never seen it.
It's objectively not good, but I loved it when I was 9 years old.
Sure.
I loved Weird Al.
Yeah.
Warlock. Starring Julian Sands, who, if you could not tell a 9-year-old Adam that he was not the next Laurence Olivier. I was convinced this guy was going to make it. I don't think he did much, but he was a warlock.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Big Man on Campus.
Have we seen that?
It's about a hunchback who goes to college. Look, you would like it more than what I just sold it as.
Okay.
Let me tell you, his name was Bob Maluga, Luga, Luga, Luga. One Maluga, four Lugas.
Okay.
You would maybe like it. Of all these movies, that's the one you would like so far. Best of the Best. Eric Roberts leads a team of kung fu athletes who compete against the Chinese.
God, whatever happened to Eric Roberts?
This movie is so far-fetched. Chris Penn is a martial artist.
Okay. I see where you're going with that one.
Okay, now I'm getting some that you might know. Parenthood. Steve Martin?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, I've seen it.
Okay.
It's okay.
All right. How I Got Into College?
Never seen it.
Yeah, Anthony Edwards, by the same guy who did Better Off Dead.
Okay.
Very funny. Okay, now I'm getting into the territory that you're familiar with. Back to the Future 2.
Okay, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was aside from the fact that, like, his mom wants to... I don't know, all these movies are weird. It's like, you're banging your mom, you're not banging your mom. Yeah. And Say Anything?
Love that one.
Mm-hmm.
John Cusack.
Little Mermaid.
Okay, I've never seen it.
You've never seen Little Mermaid?
Oh, I was 30 something.
Guess okay.
I didn't have any kids. If I had kids, I would have seen it 50 times.
Matt in the movie theater singing Under the Sea by himself eating popcorn. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Okay,
have you
I
seen
enjoyed that?
Have you seen that? Okay,
yeah, I enjoyed it.
I was gonna say that's something else. Batman,
the original with Michael Keaton.
Yes,
I took my nephew to see that.
What'd you think?
Yeah, I liked it. It's the last one I saw.
Jack Nicholson,
yeah,
Michael Keaton.
That was good. Yeah,
Prince does the soundtrack.
Yeah,
there's a lot to like about that movie. And then this one, I'm almost certain you've seen it. We've never talked about it. The Burbs.
Tom Hanks.
Mm-hmm.
Who else was in that?
I think one of the lesser Murray brothers, maybe?
Oh, yeah. His brother. Not Bill, but...
I'm not sure. Yeah. Not the Brian Doyle.
Oh.
I don't know off the top of my head. Like, okay. He was a... I forget his name, but he was like a big, goofy, fat guy who made a lot of movies during that time. And he was always like the neighbor who, you know...
It wasn't Belushi, was it?
Yeah, no, there's no Belushi. Oh. No.
Okay.
But the real best movie of that year is Dead Poets Society.
Okay. I liked it.
That's your reaction to Dead Poets? I liked it?
I mean, if you're comparing it to Do the Right Thing, I didn't like it that much. I know.
Well, I mean...
It's just a matter of opinion. Anyway.
I do have like a boarding school. Like if a movie takes place in boarding school, I tell you, I like it. Like I'm already in.
Yeah.
You know?
Was that... That was nominated though, right?
Yeah. Anyway, I just had to document because it was such...
Well, I guarantee it's better than our first movie.
Good segue, Matt.
Which is Driving Miss Daisy. I don't know, I saw this when it first came out, Super Bowl Sunday. I just started dating this woman, and she wanted to go to Outback. But, Outback always had a freaking line, an hour long, on Super Bowl Sunday. The restaurants are empty.
And as you hinted at last episode, you had inside track because you were in the service business.
Yeah, I was a restaurant, I was a bartender. And at that time, I was a manager. So... Yeah, so we went and saw this movie, then had dinner at Outback, and, just, it was okay. I really never had a great meal at Outback.
Yeah, I mean...
And that Bloomin' Onion sucks.
It's a lot of fried dough and sauce.
Right. So...
And I never thought that would be the move to get, like, the ladies in the mood, mm-hmm, I never thought, like, let's eat a Bloomin' Onion and then, like, head to the bedroom.
But anyways, I saw this, and it just didn't, I don't know, something about it just felt kind of flat to me, It spans 25 years in this relationship of an older Jewish woman from Atlanta and her driver and what they go through in the 25 years that they're together and stuff like that. But it didn't feel like it was powerful. Like, to me it just felt, I don't know, maybe it was, it just didn't like the story that much, I guess.
Yeah.
And the writing just... And Morgan Freeman, who's great, I don't know.
Yes, sir.
He did that kind of step and fetch it thing.
Everyone,
I think that's what I felt.
Everyone did.
Yes.
That's the problem. Like,
yeah.
So
they're all like typecast, kind of,
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, the problem with this movie is that it's like, white people be like this, black people be like this. This is like the old like Def Jam comic joke where like a black comedian gets me goes, white people drive like this, black people drive like this. It's like, it's so stupid. It's like, no, it's like, and that's the thing that this movie is missing, that Do the Right Thing has, is nuance.
Nuance, lots of nuance.
Yeah,
Do the Right Thing.
Yeah, Do the Right Thing. We'll get to it, but it's like, Do the Right Thing. It's like, for example, it's not just Danny Aiello who hates Radio Raheem's music. Mm-hmm. It's also Sweet Dick Willie.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like, the old black guys.
Right. It's not a racial thing. It's an old thing.
Well,
right?
Yeah, we'll get to that. But yeah, there's a lot to say about that kind of stuff in mm-hmm. the next movie. There's none of that in this movie.
Yeah.
It felt like something that could have been made in the 50s almost. Except, well, maybe the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because there was change a little bit. But, you know, even in the end, nobody really changed that much, you know.
I was thinking about that too. Like, when I was watching the end, and, like, you know, spoiler, like, everyone lives or whatever, and mm-hmm. they meet up at the end, and they and turns out their relationship strengthens, if you didn't know that, like,
right.
So at the end they supposedly have like this fondness for each other, but when they finally meet at the end, like, it maybe this is more like true to life than like I'm giving it credit for, mm-hmm. but like, they have nothing to say to each other. They have really nothing to say.
Right.
Right? He meets up with the Dan Aykroyd character, and he's like, so, how's your daughter? Oh, she's that old now? Ooh, mine's this old. Okay. Yeah. Like, it's like the awkward conversation you have with, like, a cop, someone you used to work with, and you see him in the grocery store. Mm-hmm. You're like, yeah, I just want this to end. It felt like they all wanted it to end. But I think we're supposed to get the impression that this was, like, a genuine connection, but it never felt like that at all.
In the end, he was still her servant.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it felt like to me.
Yeah.
There was no... You know, I mean, okay, in the end, they're at the old folks' home, and she tells her son, get lost, because, you know, I want to talk to him. But they don't really have anything to say to each other.
Exactly.
You know? There's no big wham in this that people change. People don't change. They might change their language a little bit,
right,
or the way they look at things a little bit.
Yeah.
But even, you know, halfway through the movie, she's saying, you know, those people, they steal, those kind of things that, you know. And then the Aykroyd has his little thing about that whole Martin Luther King thing was bullshit.
Forced.
It was forced, you know, and... I don't know if that has something to do with the director, who's an Australian.
No, oh.
Bruce Beresford.
They're famously terrible directors. I don't know. I'm just joking. I have no idea. Like, but I mean, maybe.
Yeah.
But I mean, he won the Academy Award, so
yeah, yeah.
You know. I mean, he apparently knew what he was doing, right?
Right. I just didn't think there was any meat to this movie.
Yeah.
You know, it felt empty. It felt like I had an appetizer after watching it. And that's why I had the Bloomin' Onion. I'm still hungry.
Did your date like the movie?
Yeah, she's kind of like... Yeah, she liked it. She didn't really... It wasn't a movie first. I'm always taking women to movies who aren't really movie people. Uh-huh. And it just...
Doesn't work out.
No. Well, except for Blue Velvet. I'll tell you that story sometime.
I think you alluded to that sometime on the show. Okay, so having said all that,
yeah,
the movie was better than I expected.
Right,
I liked it more than I expected.
It's not terrible. It's just not. It's not Academy Award worthy.
It does not hold up
mm-mm.
at all.
No,
but there's something there. There's so the first 25, 30 minutes of this movie are just the fucking worst, mm-hmm. and it's like Jessica Tandy, who,
mm-hmm.
I mean, she, I only know her as an old lady. Like, I don't know if she just had like a long, illustrious career.
Oh, she did. She was okay. She was a Broadway star. She was an actress. Her husband was named Hume Crone, who was in, what's the movie where those old people get taken back to?
Cocoon? Okay.
Yeah, he was in that.
Uh-huh.
He was in a bunch of other stuff. But yeah, they're an old married couple. Same in the second movie, we had an old married couple who did a lot of acting together too. But yeah, he's not in this. But yeah, she's a pretty. She had a very lengthy career.
She was a big deal back then.
Yeah, yeah. But not just in Hollywood, but on Broadway too.
So when I knew of this movie as a kid, like, I never watched it. I mean, like, I'm guessing my mom went out to watch it. I'm sure my dad did not for obvious reasons.
Right.
But. I don't know, like again, the first part of it was just so, like, repetitive,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, yeah, you're repeating the idea that she's this hard to get along with person,
okay.
but you're not ever, like, furthering it. It's just like, it's like she's annoying without being complicated,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, give me, like, this movie was supposed to work because you're supposed to understand that she is a terrible person
right.
in some ways, but also a good person in other ways. And guess what? Life is complicated, right? That's what you're supposed to take away from it. You're just like, yeah, she's just some old bitch. Like, and it's like, okay, like I'm not here for her transformation. I don't care.
Yeah.
And then there's this moment where she's like, let me teach you how to read. Buh, buh, buh. Yeah. It's like, okay, you're a terrible teacher. Like, your lesson doesn't make any sense. And also, what the fuck? Like, so...
Again, that was very forced.
Right.
We have to get them together somehow. So she's going to be nice to him and teach him how to read.
Yeah, but she never does.
No. We don't see it anyway.
She's like, I just want you to go place these flowers over here. That's why I'm going to be nice to you. It's like, what? It's like, it doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. And it is kind of hard to follow. There's no moment of growth. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot of her just being an old bitch. And then slowly there are some moments like where, like when they go to Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And there is some humor, you know?
Yeah.
Morgan Freeman's like, there type of the time, the first time I left Georgia, she's like, what? He's like, just a couple seconds ago. That's a funny line,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then this cop pulls him over and he's like, the cop, you can tell, is like, well, I don't like either of you. You're a Jew and you're a black and that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there was no like second level to it.
There was no confrontation.
There was
it
no.
It was like, let me see your license. Let me see your. This is my car, officer. He's my driver. There was no, you know, in a heat of the night moment, you know, that kind of thing where, you know, he gets thrown up against the car or mm-hmm. something and she's screaming or something.
Right.
It was just very gentle.
Oh, there was no moment where, like, the police officer, like, obviously, like, dismissed her as, like, a lesser second-class citizen,
right.
which is what he was thinking.
Right.
It only happens they leave, and then they mention it to each other.
Yeah.
And it's just like, well, that doesn't mean anything.
I think the whole movie played safe.
Yeah, for 100%.
It played safe. There was no edginess to it. There was no anything to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, Dan Aykroyd, he was fine as the son, but there was nothing to him. You know, he's a successful businessman, you know. Oh, yeah, I can't go to the Martin Luther King speech, blah, 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 because, you know. I actually thought, early on in the movie, because that takes place, what, in the 40s?
I think late 40s. I think when he gets hired, it's like...
48, I think.
I thought it was 53.
No, I think it was 48 because they mentioned it.
Okay.
They were mentioning... there was different ways we saw what... year it was, and I forget what it, you know. Oh, it was a radio thing or something, you know, something about something in 1948. So, but people were nicer to the Morgan Freeman character than they probably really would have been.
Right,
he was allowed to go in the office. He was allowed to do this. He was allowed to do, you know.
There's a scene where he's arguing for pay.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what his pay would have been?
Right,
$3,000 a month. In today's dollars.
Right.
Which is like, I mean, it's not, you know, it's obviously it's not a livable wage, but it's like, really? Just for, you drive this old lady like 1 hour a day?
Right.
Like, you're not exactly busting your ass.
Yeah, he was making like 65 bucks an hour or something. Or 65 bucks a week.
75 a week, 70, yeah.
75 a week.
Yeah, because he argues and gets that promotion. Yeah. I mean, that's
a lot of money back then. No wonder he could buy the Cadillacs.
Right. And going back to your point about like how he was treated, how he acts, like I think that's the whole thing about this movie is that, and I think it's, I mean, not to diminish Morgan Freeman because I think he's a good actor, but he's the one that was chosen because he makes people feel good.
That's it. That's exactly what I think.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't any, could have been Ozzie Davis, who we saw in the second movie, you know, or something like that. Somebody who could give a little crankiness to him.
Imagine this movie with John Witherspoon.
Right.
Oh, I'm Lopez Davis. Like I'm farting in Miss Daisy's car. Like, that would have been a much better movie.
Yeah. This movie took no chances. And I think that's my biggest problem. It's not a horrible movie. You know, if I'd shown it to Gloria, she probably would have liked it.
I was ready to hate it. And mm-hmm. I hated the first part of it. And then when... like, the real movie is, like, between the conversations between Morgan Freeman and Tandy, obviously. Mm-hmm. And there's some moments when, you know, there's some real shit happening there, right? When he's, like, when they're in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I got to go make water.
Yeah.
And I got to go, you know, rock a piss. And She's like, no, she's on the service station. He's like, I can't, you know, like.
She seemed to forget that there was laws against
that. Yeah, and then, you know,
he couldn't do and couldn't do.
And there's a moment, he's like, how do you think I feel as a grown man asking you permission?
Right.
Like, I'm just doing it.
That was the best line of the whole movie.
Yeah, I mean, that was like that confrontation where it was like, and then she gets kind of scared because he's gone. And like, more of that.
All right.
Like, push it a little bit more, you know.
That was the most edgy scene in the movie. I don't understand why he didn't go behind the sign. The billboard.
Who knows?
I just go, come on, a billboard. But yeah, that was a lot further than any other scene, you know, between them two, I think.
And there was this other, like, early on, like, kind of theme where, you know, she's this old woman and she keeps saying, like, I grew up poor, but, you know, he's like, you're not now.
Yeah.
Like, if I was you, I'd be showing up.
And he keeps
like,
saying that. You're rich, you're Jewish.
Right. And he keeps pointing out to her and, like, she's upset about it, but... You ever again that like second level of like what does that mean to her? Why is she ashamed of being like rich? Like what is it? Like can we explore that a little bit? Like how does that relate to the way that she treats Idella and she treats him? And like you know she's trying to be nice, but she's also like clearly a modern day you know kind of a slave owner in a way. Like I mean she's you know they're so, I don't know just
yeah. Can she won't let them talk? You know,
why are you carrying on?
Yeah,
you
know, all this shit. What's all this laughing about?
Right.
You know, they don't do that when you're not here. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of stuff. Yeah, it was like this. Yeah, she turned into the slave owner, and Adela. You know, Esther Rolle, who's a fantastic actress, she really didn't have anything to do in this.
No,
her except, part was nothing.
Except die.
Yeah, and we don't even get to see that. We just see her drop the peas.
She just told you,
yeah.
Mind those peas.
Yeah. So I think that's my biggest problem. There were better movies that year that deserved to win more than this one.
Morgan Freeman was in better movies that year.
Yeah.
He was in Lean on Me and Glory.
Both fantastic. Both really good movies.
Like, he's like the time traveling black avatar for white people.
I remember when he said, you know, I'm in my 70s. And this was in 19, but and I didn't know how old Morgan Freeman was when he made this. He was actually 60.
Now, is he younger now than he was when he made this movie?
He's like 95, you know.
Yeah.
And you know he's in his 90s, 93. But yeah, I was wondering if he was really 40 because I think the guy has looked old his whole life, his whole adult life.
Yeah.
Older. Yeah,
he's one of those dudes that like was born, like walking with gray hair, and like telling the doctor like, well, that was the moment I'll never forget. Like I, you know, walking out of my mother's vagina. Yeah, interesting movie. Dan Aykroyd, interesting choice for him at that time. Like, has he done other dramatic roles? I don't know of any.
I don't think so. Oh, I'm sure he has, but...
Because he was pretty good in this, and I think most of what I thought believable about him is that when he's wearing suspenders, he's got a big old country ass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is we're like on the chunky side of Aykroyd.
Oh, Dan Aykroyd is actually an okay actor. He's not, you know, I think he's pretty good, but...
He was fine.
Yeah, he was fine.
He was fine.
It was an interesting choice.
It was an interesting choice. Like, you would think that you're getting this great comedic actor. You thought it would be maybe a little funnier, you know? But it wasn't. I mean,
didn't really have anything to do.
No.
Oh, mama. You're a, what do you call her all the time? You're a doodle.
Yeah, you're a doodle.
You're a doodle.
Oh, his name is Booley? What do you think Booley is short for?
I don't know.
Bulworth? I don't know.
Bulford? I don't know.
Yeah. Bulford?
I don't know. I no idea. And there's really, that's about it. There's like four people in this movie. Patti LuPone, or whatever her name is, she's a big Broadway star, singer.
Who was she?
She was Aykroyd's wife.
Yeah.
And she had nothing to do.
Yeah, complain. Where am I going to get my coconut for my ambrosia?
Being another asshole.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that asshole was it. To this cook.
Yeah. That was it. There was no, it's like either you're a white asshole... Oh, you're Dan Aykroyd and you're nice.
But real racist. Kind of a racist.
He was rich. He was just like, you know, he was just disconnected.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was the vibe I got.
Okay.
And who said Morgan Freeman did his Morgan Freeman thing. What are you going to do about that?
Mm-hmm.
That's hard to stop.
Yep.
So yeah, that's Driving Miss Daisy. I don't have any need to go through the plot. I mean, there's not much happens. They drive, they get old, they eventually like each other in a way that's a little bit contrived.
It was originally a play, so.
Oh, okay. I mean, I can see it working, but I mean, the play would have to be snappier. Mm-hmm. Again, it's way better than I thought it was going to be.
Okay, that's
like,
good.
Like way better. Because mm-hmm. even like going through like the first 20 minutes, I stopped it and I was like, God damn, I don't want to watch this. Like,
this is terrible.
You know, like, I'm like, you know, like the Celtics are playing the fucking Nets. I'm going to watch that. But put this on. I was like, okay.
Oh, good. I'm glad you liked it a little bit. I mean, it's not horrible. I just don't think it deserved what it got.
Yeah, it's like an interesting like artifact. Mm-hmm. Especially, I think, when you compare it to Do the Right Thing. Like, mm-hmm. because they're both trying to say something about race, and like they just approach it in really different ways. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, sometimes we do these pairings and don't know really what we're doing, and then at the end we're like, oh, actually, that was a really good pairing.
Yeah, yeah. I think it ended up pretty good.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I would agree. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Anything else you want to say about it?
Like, no, I'm kind of
okay. Yeah, there was no, oh, it's that guy or anything, or no. Like, no.
Not like the next movie. That is, oh, it's that guy movie.
Yeah. This one, okay, so this one also had, like, this weird sheen mm-hmm. on it, you know, like they put a little bit of Vaseline on the camera or right. something, and just to have that, like, just to, I don't know, it's like, just to make it, like, okay, it's almost like you're gonna have, like, a character in your movie, like, I want this guy to be an asshole. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to bow tie on him. It's like that extra level now you know he's an asshole.
Yeah.
It's like, I want the audience to think this is like whimsical or magical or something. I don't
know.
It's
just, and even the music was mm-hmm. kind of this whimsical, you know,
yep.
this piano thing. And yeah, it didn't have any, like, the next movie we're listening to NWA a lot.
No, Public Enemy.
Public Enemy. Well, I can't even get those guys mixed up. But anyways, it had this power.
Yeah.
And the music in this had nothing. It was mm-mm. it was no. I don't know. People liked it. They voted for it.
So something about this movie is like, I think that the audience, when you watch this movie, you look back on like the 40s and 50s, and you kind of think like, as you were saying, like, it was fine. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
See, it wasn't that bad. Which is a weird thing to think about that time, right?
Right. It was terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I think that's one of the main reasons I didn't like this, because I said, this isn't realistic. Mm-hmm. You know, Everybody's nice. They're pretty nice to this guy, except the old lady at first, you know. And, I don't know. I didn't find it to be very realistic.
Yeah. Yeah. We only got two Alabama cops, which is funny, because, like, it's like, see, even Georgians think Alabamans are racist.
Well, all right. Well, I don't know. Ho
hum. Yeah, I mean, it
wasn't terrible.
It's more complicated than I expected. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I'm just gonna hate this. But no, it has some moments. It has some lines. It has some zingers. Mm-hmm. I mean, Morgan Freeman, right? I mean, he could like, he's everything. He's the voice of God.
I could watch him burn toast.
Yeah. All right, you want to guess the score? We've got 107,000 people checking in.
Whoa!
Which is a lot of people. This is IMDb.
These are people, right? I'm going to go 7.6.
7.4.
Okay. A little lower.
So still above that scarecrow threshold of 7.3. Mm-hmm. But, wow. This is incredible. You ready for this?
Yeah.
I'm guessing this guy got to make a lot more movies. Budget, $7.5 million. U.S. gross, $106 million.
All right.
Worldwide, $145. Wow. So, yeah, this dude, definitely.
Bruce Beresford.
Hey, I mean, he made the movie the studio wanted. He got his Academy Award. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he's not having trouble falling asleep at night. All right, Rotten Tomatoes, guess the score. Tomato meter, 65 critics.
I'll go 89.
82.
Oh, good. Lower.
I think that's like the, I think that's the modern lens of mm-hmm. it, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing somewhere in this very town there's probably like this movie's probably used as some example of like, you know, critical race theory or something. But I'm guessing
I liked it less the second time I saw it
than
the first.
You're
a little older and
you've got a different perspective. Right. Mm-hmm. And the audience, 50,000 people checking in.
I'm gonna go 85 81.
Uh-huh. So you're a little behind. So all right, this is a critic's consensus. You ready?
Yep.
While it's fueled in part by outdated stereotypes, True. Mm-hmm. Driving Miss Daisy takes audiences on a heartwarming journey with a pair of outstanding actors. Okay, this I'm glad that I read this because I want to ask this question. Is Jessica Tandy a good actress?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, I haven't seen any evidence of that yet.
And the role that she had was just crabby old woman.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah.
But she is good.
She was in The Birds with Alfred Hitchcock.
Oh, okay. So she was like the main...
No, she was the second main. Second, you know, Tippi Hedren was the main one. And Jessica Tandy.
Was she like a dime piece when she was younger? Was she like a hot thing?
She was okay. Yeah, she was all right. Yeah. Her husband has just been very talented stage actors for the most part, so...
I feel like you have too much respect for her to like say that she was attractive or something. Yeah. You're like, you're very protective of Jessica Tandy. That's the vibe I'm getting. All right, Matt, you want to take a break?
Sure.
All right, we'll come back and we will talk about Do the Right Thing. Next movie of the week is 1989's Do the Right Thing. Mm-hmm. Listen here, Mookie.
So,
Do the Right Thing.
Do the Right Thing.
That's it?
The mayor.
That's it. Do the Right Thing.
Ozzie Davis. Yeah, this was kind of my choice that when we were trying to figure out what we're going to do. You had never seen this.
I have.
Oh, you had seen it.
But I mean, probably half drunk, like in Korea, like just like we'll just download something, like having some beers, like okay, I'll check it out.
But my contention was this should have won. I think this is Spike Lee's best movie, and it said more about race than Driving Miss Daisy, a lot more.
It's a lot more about like you said race. I'm assuming you mean like racial,
yes,
conflict, racial relationships, conflict, racism, how we view each other, But obviously, this one's not gonna win because it's not hopeful.
No, and it was made by a black director at the time who was kind of brash, and this was his third movie, I think.
I'm looking it up right now.
Not She Got to Have It, I think, was the first one. And then there was a musical he did.
School Days?
School Days.
Okay.
And I'm not the biggest Spike Lee fan. I've generally been disappointed with a lot of his movies.
Hit or miss, hit for or sure. Miss.
Yeah.
Right, because we did a show on Jungle Fever.
Which was enjoyable. Good. It was good.
Summer Sam, very uneven.
Uneven.
And then Defy Bloods, which is like... What?
Way overrated.
Oh, yeah. If you like the Five Bloods, like...
If you all that talk about him winning director and all that stuff, it just faded away because you know why? People saw it.
Yeah.
And that was not that great. I think this is, if Spike Lee has a masterpiece, I think this is it. Because it says so much about who we are in America. And this could be made today.
That's true.
You know, I mean, the pivotal thing that happens near the end, they're still doing it.
Right.
You know, it was like you're watching a video from CNN last night. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So.
Right.
This movie gets better. Driving Miss Daisy does not.
Right. It gets worse.
Gets worse.
Yeah, 100%. So, 1989's Do the Right Thing, starring everybody, mm-hmm. written and directed by Spike Lee. story of our young protagonist, Mookie, a shiftless, you always say, what do you say, lazy?
Lazy, shiftless bastard.
He's a lazy, shiftless bastard pizza salesman.
Right.
Pizza delivery guy. Right,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, he's working for these, it's an Italian family.
Sal and his two sons.
Danny Aiello and John Turturro and the other guy who I always see everywhere.
Richard Edson. Vito and...
Pino.
And, you know, Tina. Yeah.
Yeah, and so he's got a complicated relationship with them, right? We find that, like, Sal has watched him grow up, so he has a fondness for him.
Not just him. All the other kids in the neighborhood.
Right, especially his sister.
Yeah, his sister, especially.
And everyone in this movie has this yelling relationship with each other,
mm-hmm.
and it's a kind of communication that, like, I'm not super familiar with. Like, I grew up in not obviously because it's a podcast, but I grew up in a white family that was unhappy, and we expressed our unhappiness through silence.
Wait a minute, we didn't grow up in the same family, did we?
So
that's exactly. Except once in a while, my father would explode.
Yeah, that's right.
It's me through a wall.
Right. It's silence. Internalize it.
Yeah.
You just swallow your anger, put it in the pit of your stomach, it slowly becomes cancer. Right.
Right.
That's exactly. That's what happens.
You know, it's why my family, and there's only three of us left out of seven.
Mm-hmm.
Three died from cancer.
But this movie is showing, you know, different cultures.
Brooklyn.
None of them white, right? Mm-hmm. Italian, Hispanic, and Black.
There's one white guy, and John Savage makes a minute thing, you know, kind of a, you know, I own this brownstone moment.
Yeah.
You know, sorry about your sneaker, you know, whatever.
Is he the How You Like Them Apples guy from Good Will Hunting? Same vibe.
He was in The Deer Hunter. He was one of the guys.
Oh, he's a big fat guy then.
No, he's a skinny guy in The Deer Hunter.
Which one is he?
Can't remember his name, but...
Okay.
Yeah, he was in Deer Hunter, right. John Savage. He was a big star, and all of a sudden he was in, he was also in The Thin Red Line.
Okay.
So, but he was destined to be a big star, and something happened. He just dropped off the face of the earth, so.
Mm.
Anyway, he's just, the only white guy in the whole thing is, you know, a minute at most.
Right.
30 seconds.
Right. So yeah, so everyone in this movie, like, they're constantly screaming at each other, but like they're used to it. So it's like, to me watching it, I'm like, God, this is really jarring. You get used to it after a while, but right. You kind of understand, like, yeah, these people are just like, they're,
that's how they live.
They're,
that's how they talk.
Yeah, they're constantly exasperated just by, like, their circumstances.
I get that from Gloria, who grew up in Newark.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she gets crazy, screaming, doing this stuff, and I'm just sitting there in my chair going, oh, my God, oh, my God. Oh my
it's
God.
Really uncomfortable, it's right?
I live on eggshells because of it, because we communicate differently. Mm-hmm. I go into smoldering, God, I hate you kind of thing, mm-hmm. you know. I hate myself, you know, what am I doing, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. But these people are, they're used to it. I mean, when I used to work for Vermont Teddy Bear Company, and I was on the sales one Valentine's Day, and a lot of our calls came from New York, New Jersey, mm-hmm. those places, and what we were told to do was to mimic or ape the person on the other line when they're from that area, because they understand that,
because mm-hmm.
they're always pushy, they want the best deal, so you just give it to them right back, and that's what they're used to. You and I grew up in white bread, we grew up in Wonder Bread, right?
yeah.
And we're not used to it. When somebody gives us that, we go, whoa.
Calm down, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we grew up Wonder Bread and Sunny Delight. At least I did. Yeah, for sure. So this is showing, you know, the audience at the time a whole different, like, perspective, right? I mean, it's not Morgan Freeman going, all right, Miss Daisy.
Yeah,
it's Mookie going, fuck you, Sal.
Right. And Sal
going, fuck you too.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the next second later, deliver this pizza, Mookie. Okay. You know, it's like...
Well, the ending is a perfect example of that.
Yeah. Let's go there now.
Yeah. I mean, Mookie starts the riot that burns Sal's down
mm-hmm.
by throwing a garbage can through the window.
Mm-hmm.
And the next day he goes... And Sal's just sitting out in front of his place. He's burned down. He's lost mm-hmm. everything. And he wants his money. Mm-hmm. He wants to be paid. It's $250.
Yeah.
Which, again, that was a lot of money back then, mm-hmm. you know. And they get in a big argument, and Sal takes money out, throws it at him. Mookie throws it back at him. And at the end, they're going like, hey, I'll see you later.
Yeah. Well, at the end, still, Sal is like, so what are you going to do?
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't know, I'm going to get a job. He's like, all right, well.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, take care of yourself.
Well, he said, you know, he I think at some point in the movie, he says, you're like a son to me.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You know. You know, and he's a lot better son than the other asshole, John DeTurio.
Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah, it's the relationships are, they're foreign to me.
Mm-hmm.
The communication.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if I should say it, but, Gloria and I, our main form of communication is sighing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Pissed off all the time.
And it's like, well, what does that sigh mean?
Right.
Whereas this movie, it's very clear what everyone means at every moment of the movie. There's no, like, even there's a lot of nuance in this movie, but it's not through language.
Mm-hmm.
It's through action.
Right.
It's through, like, the cops who, the first time we see them, they seem like nice guys, right? They're like, this guy gets sprayed with the fire hydrant, and they're like, hey, listen, it's not a big deal. Come on, it's a bunch of kids in the summer with a fire hydrant. Like, let it go.
Right.
And then later, they kill Radio Raheem. So it's like, it's that extreme. It's like, yeah, not like they're not all
devils.
That's
the way it is to everybody in this movie. Like, even Mookie is telling all the guys, get a job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no, I think maybe... I don't know if John Turturro ever has that moment where he's going to...
He's
the one guy
right.
that you never see the other side of.
No, so the only other guy is bugging out.
Right.
Giancarlo Esposito.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, he's the other one who's on the other side. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't like white people.
Yeah.
John Turturro doesn't like black people.
Right.
But everybody else, we love Sal's. Right. I grew up on that stuff. And they're always nice to me, and they, mm-hmm. Whatever. It was this... And that's when, I think when I first saw this movie, when it first came out, I think I was a little bit worried about what was going to happen. When people saw this, they'd get angry. Then I realized that Spike Lee spreads everything around. There's good and bad in everybody.
That's exactly it, right?
And he spread it around to everybody, even the cops,
mm-hmm.
Except the two, like you said, the John Turturro character and the Giancarlo Esposito character.
And they're unlikable.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're extremists.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
And that's what it is.
Yeah.
But now, I think now, we're having, mm-hmm. you mentioned this movie was relevant, because, mm-hmm. The whole George Floyd thing or whatever. I don't mean to say whatever. Now we have to be real careful about how we talk about it, right? Yeah. Obviously, it's a big deal. Like, I don't feel a need to quantify it all the time. But now, in, regular conversation, you can't say... Like no one could say, those cops that killed George Floyd, or even the cops that watched him die,
mm-hmm.
if someone said, well, actually, an hour before that, they really helped me out. It's like, well, it doesn't matter. It's like everything has to be this or that. There's no, some
whole hole of the people. Black and white.
Well, we've become Turturro and Bugging Out.
Yeah, and that's what we've become. Because, about 10 days ago, I fell on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
It was rough. I hit my head pretty hard. I had a little sore neck and everything.
You showed me the aspirins to prove it.
Right. And I had these. But they didn't show up for like 2 or 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden Gloria goes, woo! But anyways, two people the next day asked me how I was doing.
Yeah.
You
mm-hmm.
and Gloria's cousin, who's a Trumpy.
Okay.
So I'm going, wait a minute. Gloria didn't even ask me how I was doing.
Well, she probably figured you're walking around.
Yeah, yeah. But that was that. That's what I realized. And watching this movie, I go, wait a minute. That's where it is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like those people, but he's a pretty decent guy, but he's, fucked up in the head.
Mm-hmm.
But he asked me how I was doing. And that reminded me of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
That there's a little good and a little bad in almost everybody.
Yeah, and little things can just creep up
mm-hmm.
and build. It's just, the whole movie is like this, has this metaphor of the heat, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're just getting hotter and hotter and hotter. And there's no relief.
Right.
That's the thing, right? Like, we have a little bit of relief with, like, the fire hydrant, but not really.
No, everyone's just freaking hot. The cops don't turn it off.
Right.
It's like, some guy gets his car wet.
Right. So it's just like, there's no, and like, even the fire hydrant thing, right? Like, you're super hot, there's no relief, so finally you break the law, and you have a little bit of relief, but it's like, that's not a long-term solution, right? That's not really what's going to fix this thing. So, yeah, it's just kind of building and building and building, and that's what happens. Like, people just hit that level at the end where, you know, even Sweet Dick Willie is, like, yelling for, like, sows to, like, be burned down, and they literally burn his place down.
Right.
And it's led, like he says, led by Mookie, who minutes ago didn't even want to let these people in the restaurant.
He's kicking them out. Yeah. He's going, I want to go home, you know.
Right.
But yeah, he's the least likely, except maybe the mayor, probably, because the mayor kind of loved everybody. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, he's of all love that everyone crew, though,
yeah.
You know, he's like the guy that, I work there, I'm not going to, you know. And I read the article that Roger Ebert wrote, a review, and he said he cried when he saw it at cons. But he asked Spike Lee, he says, so did Mookie do the right thing? He says, you know, no black person has ever asked me that.
Wow.
I thought that was like, whoa.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
What was his answer? Was that it?
That was his answer. It was... Oh. You know, I don't, you know, that's what was in the review.
So. Okay, so when I said whoa, I immediately took that to mean like no. Mm-hmm. But maybe Spike Lee was saying that as like, Ebert, you don't even get it.
Yeah.
So which one do you think he was saying?
I think he was just saying no. Okay. I think he was just saying, yeah, you maybe you're right. He didn't get it.
I don't know. Like,
yeah,
there's different ways to get it to interpret it, right? Yeah, yeah. And that's what makes the movie good.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think this is a very important movie, and it held up so well.
So, you have anything else you want to say about like just kind of big picture? I want to talk about like how it was like the actual structure of the movie.
Okay.
First time I watched it, I don't know. Maybe I was distracted. Like I said, maybe I like, you know, was on like beer number three, and I was just like kind of like just killing time on like a Sunday afternoon, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But. Like, the way it's structured is so perfect for what it's trying to do.
Right.
Because it's like, boom, 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 boom. It never, like, relents, right?
Did you ever get bored watching this?
Hell no.
No. There's no boring parts at all. It just keeps coming at you.
Yeah.
It keeps coming at you, you know?
And, like, there's some parts where I was like there's, like, this group of, like, three guys and a girl who kind of, like, walking around, like... Mm-hmm. They were, like, my least favorite. Like
Martin Lawrence.
Very underutilized Martin Lawrence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it's like, I mean, I saw him like, God dang, like, your perspective is different than mine, but to me, like, Martin Lawrence was the king of the first half of the 90s. I mean,
yeah,
absolutely.
Oh, I remember.
King.
Yeah, he was huge.
Like,
and then they found him wandering around the streets and doing weird shit.
Hey, man.
I know. And it happens to all of us.
He didn't hurt anybody. He didn't hurt anybody.
No,
you know what I'm saying? Like,
but no, he was the king.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Like, his show was unimpeachable. Mm-hmm. His movies were hilarious. His stand-up.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think people talk about his stand-up enough. Yeah, his stand-up is underrated by now. I think it's kind of forgotten. I think people go Eddie Murphy, then to go right to Chris Rock. And they don't think about Martin Lawrence in there.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's a tangent. But that group, I didn't really like that much. But whatever. They're there for a second. And then it's something else. You know, it's like... It's almost like a mixtape where it's like boom,
Latinos,
boom, boom. Yeah.
There's the mayor, there's the queen, sister, or the mother, sister.
Mother, sister. Sister, mother, sister. Yeah, I don't know.
Whatever it was. You know, that whole thing. It was just, and you know, Radio Raheem.
Uh-huh.
Bill Nunn. Wow.
What'd you think about the love?
And I wanted to say one thing before I forget. Yeah. Because you were talking about how people are yelling at each other. But that's not the loudest thing in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
It's Radio Raheem carrying a boombox around. That's the one. People never complain about people yelling at each other, but they you know, even black people and white people complain about the music.
Right.
It's the loudest.
Right. And what was it? There's this conversation. He has a conversation with Bugnaut. He's like, hey, Bugnaut's like, you ever think about playing like something like soft or something? He's like, I like Public Enemy. It's like, he's like, all right, like, we're a team here, so we gotta acquiesce a little bit.
Boycott South.
What did you think about Randy Raheem's love hate callback to Robert Mitchum in something the night?
Gregory Peck in God. Why are we
Killer?
Oh.
What was that movie with the he has? So the movie is Robert Mitchum is this traveling preacher. He's got love and hate on his fingers.
Oh yeah, that's
The Night of the Killer? Night of the Hunter.
A fabulous movie if you've never seen it, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, an obvious throwback to that, right? I didn't quite... I was like, what's the connection? I'm not quite getting it. I mean, he does have that little speech of like, this is love, this is hate. It's not the same as Robert Mitchum's, but it's like sort of a bigger metaphor of like, you know, we're here, but we're not quite... We could get along, we're not getting along.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Spike just saw, you know, Night of the Hunter and said, I can use part of that. Yeah, it's different.
I mean, I get the sense that Spike is like a huge film buff. I think that maybe you don't initially think of like like Tarantino. You know, he's probably that level of like
or Scorsese.
Yeah, and he's always pulling stuff, right?
Right. Yeah.
The great ones steal.
Yeah, the great ones steal. But yeah, that whole speech, it did remind me of that of Robert Mitchum thing, but. In a different context.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is, we're talking about the streets now. We're talking about, you know, Brooklyn. We're talking about...
Right. Robert Mitchum's trying to ingratiate himself into, like, this new family. Radio Raheem is saying, you better watch the fuck out.
Right.
But I like you, Mookie.
Yeah.
Like, I hate everyone else, but I like you, Mookie.
You like Mookie in the Bug Out.
Right. But that's the thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, Radio Raheem is like, I either love or I hate. I don't have anything in the middle. I don't like anyone.
I didn't even think about that. That's true. And that's why the whole movie is.
Yeah.
But that's it's saying it's not like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's love, hate, you know.
There's a little mix. There's tolerate.
Yeah, tolerate.
There's like roll your eyes, you know. Right.
But that's what we've become now,
mm-hmm.
is love, hate. That's it. Mm-hmm. There's no in between.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. You know, this is one of the best conversations we've ever had with a movie, isn't it?
It's good.
It's good, I think.
I don't know. So, what about any other, like, okay, so, I mean, by the way, Sam Jackson is in this movie.
Mother Love or whatever his name is.
I don't remember. Probably not Mother Love. But, yeah, he's in this movie and he's kind of like the through piece a little bit.
And this is early in his career. Mm-hmm. You know? Well, there's a lot of guys in this movie. Frankie Faison and... people like that.
Do you think Sam Jackson just calls up Spike Lee like once a month and says, hey, thanks.
Yeah. You got me in a Jungle Fever. I got this, you know. Oh, Mr. Senior Love Daddy.
There you go.
Yeah.
But I mean, Sam Jackson just has to like call Spike Lee and be like, listen.
Right.
Thank you again, by the way. I'm cashing, you know, millions and millions of dollars of checks off these Marvel movies. Like Sam Jackson has been in, like, I think, like, the highest grossing movies of all time.
Sure.
And it's just like, I'm sure he's just like, yeah, thank you, by the way.
He says, I love the zeros at the end of the check.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, who else is in this? I mean, a lot of people are, I mean, oh, before we forget, there was a time...
Rosie Perez.
Yes.
I was going to say.
There's a time in young Adam's life. It's right around the time where White Men Can't Jump came out. You could not tell me that Rosie Perez was not the most attractive female on the planet.
She was hot.
She was flawless.
And she was that woman you and I would be scared of. Because she would tell you... the way it is.
I can handle it.
Not
as a 9-year-old kid, not as an 11-year-old kid, but now I'd be like, I can handle me some Rosie.
She's in one of my favorite movies, which is Fearless.
Okay.
With Jeff Bridges.
I don't know it.
Yeah, it's about a plane crash.
Oh.
And the survivors.
Did she get naked?
No.
That's a shame. She does in this one.
We don't know if that's her, though.
Oh, really?
It could be a body double.
Oh.
I think it was. Yeah, we never see her face with the...
Okay, you're right.
Yeah.
But man, you just ruined that for me. But she got naked and White Man Can't Jump, and that's clearly her because like she's like walking around like a jersey hanging off her breast, and like what a hot look that was.
She was good in this.
Yeah,
she had a small role.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. is Mookie's love interest.
Baby mama? Wait, no. Baby mama.
Yep. Yeah, with Hector.
Yeah, well, I mean, am I wrong that we don't find out Mookie has a kid until he goes to her house, or does it mention earlier?
No, it's kind of mentioned earlier. Okay. When she said something like, your daddy is worthless, blah, blah, blah. Gotcha. So I kind of figured out, you got to be talking about somebody in a movie, you know. That's the way I got it.
Yeah, she was great. I mean, Giancarlo Esposito.
Who I love.
I mean, that guy is no slouch.
Yeah.
John Turturro.
Yeah.
Also should be calling Spike. He should be calling Spike Lee and the Coen brothers, like, on the daily. Yeah. Thank you both. Like,
Ozzie Davis and Rudy D.
I don't know.
They were a married couple for many, many years.
They had great chemistry.
Yeah.
You can tell they vibed.
Yeah.
Right?
They played the parents in Jungle Fever, Samuel Jackson's parents. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they're good. Yeah, they're great.
Yeah, that's all I know them for. I mean, Danny Aiello.
Wasn't he good, though?
He was good. Like, how many shirts did that dude wear during this movie? Mm-hmm. This movie takes place in one day. He's wearing 25 shirts. He's like, it's like Cher with his wardrobe changes. But no one else has changed his shirts except him. He's like the only one that's like, that brought like the wardrobe.
Right, right.
We already mentioned Bill Nunn. Oh.
Miguel Sandoval, I know. He was in Entourage. Get Shorty.
Oh, you skipped over the late, great Robin Harris.
Oh.
Sweet
Dick
Willie.
Greatest name ever.
He's the one who's just like, he's with those three older guys and they're just sweating and talking S. And I'm not 100% sure, but I'm guessing that he's, you know, improvising his lines.
That's another thing about this movie. I noticed that. I just felt like sometimes, okay, this is improv, or they're just practicing, they're just doing it. And Spike said, that works.
Mm-hmm.
He died right after this. He died in 1990.
Yeah, he did like this cartoon called Baby's Kids. Like, he was really about to blow up in a way that was...
he was in a House Party.
Going to be really impressive. Yeah, he was a dad in House Party.
Yeah, yeah.
He was really, really funny.
Mo Better Blues. I must admit, that was his last movie, which was Spike Lee's next movie.
Yep.
Played Butterbean Jones. He always had good names.
Yeah, what a great cast. What a... interesting. And also they did like the Spike Lee thing. I forgot to mention this, like the director thing, right, where it's like, what's Spike Lee's move? His move is when the camera's right in your face, right. In Jungle Fever, it's like kind of pulls up. This one just starts there, right? And it's just like, and that's where you just see people like, you know, Junter, you motherfucking like,
oh yeah, it was each race was saying the names they call each other, they're called the other people.
Another thing we haven't mentioned in this movie, the Korean family.
Yeah.
Who are just like...
At
the end, he's like, we're the same. I'm the same as you. I'm the same as you. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't know how to say this delicately, so I'm just going to say it. But there's this moment where this gentleman who seems to be from like the Caribbean, and then like Robin Sweet Dick Willie are like...
Yeah, they're arguing at somebody.
They're arguing about like the Korean family. And Sweet Dick Willie's like, what? Like... Why do you like? Yeah, if you, like, you didn't do it because you didn't do it. Like, you're mad that they have the store, but like, fuck you, you didn't do it.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
and the guy's like trying to like work out like, is it because like, what? Why is it? Why is that?
Because we're black, and
right.
And they're going, no,
yeah,
because you didn't want to do it, or you're just lazy,
right? And so that is something that you could never have that conversation, like, you couldn't have that conversation today in like a public. You couldn't.
No.
You and I could not have the conversation in public today.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, but he could say it then, even though it's back then. It's like, it's weird how like we've regressed in some ways to, you know, like Spike was at like the forefront of this conversation. Like, let's talk some real shit. But
Spike sees the world. He's a big world person. He sees things bigger than a lot of people. He sees the nuances. He sees the edges. He sees the gray areas. You know, he's not a radical of any sense. And this movie proves it, you know.
But he's also like, fuck your sensitivity.
Right, right. Yeah.
You know, like, get over it and talk about it.
Right, let's talk about
Figure
it
out. Yeah. Like, what is actually going on here? And I just thought it was interesting that they threw them in there. And there was a little bit of confrontations or whatever, but it was fine. I did like the mayor's aversion to... What was it? Michelob Light?
Miller Light.
Miller Light. He wanted Miller High Life.
Where's my High Life? Right. Whatever. He's going, I forget what, he had a great line. It was something, this stuff is, you know. Yeah, the mayor. He was wonderful in this, you know. I don't know. This movie sparks conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's almost more fun to talk about than to watch. I mean, it was fun to watch, but... Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As I was watching it, I was like, oh, okay. Like, I didn't take any notes. I've abandoned note taking, by the way.
It drove me crazy because I had to stop every time, right? And then I go, where was I?
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So I'm just winging it.
Yeah. That's our brand. Yeah. Yeah. Wang it.
So I looked up Joey Lee, who played Jade, which was.
The girl in the crew?
No, oh. Wasn't that his sister?
I don't know. Oh, yeah, we didn't talk about that. Okay, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, the sister. And the only movies I recognize her from are Spike Lee movies. Mm-hmm. It's Spike Lee's sister.
There you go.
I wonder why. How stupid am I?
But yeah, she had that weird scene with Danny Aiello. Yeah. For some reason, Aiello. So Danny Aiello, and he's like really nice to her in like a way that's like kind of creepy. Mm. And I think
everybody else can see it.
Yeah, and he is being creepy, but she's also like kind of into it.
Nobody else pays attention to her,
and it's just like that is like this other weird layer of okay, what's happening?
And then
here?
Mookie tells her. You know,
and he's like, she's like, no, she kind of rejects it, and then he's pissed off because he kind of got caught.
Did you see the when they were arguing?
Yeah,
out on the brick building, there was a graffiti.
Yep.
Did you see what it said?
Tawana was right, or something.
Yeah. Tawana Brawley.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, she was wrong.
What was it?
She accused some white guys of doing, you know, raping her and writing stuff on her stomach with a knife. Turned out she did it all herself.
Oh, she's like the
Al Sharpton jumped in it. Mm-hmm. You know, was this, you know, and he's never apologized.
Was that known when this movie was made?
No.
Oh, okay.
It came later.
Gotcha. Yeah. So she's like the Jussie Smollett of her day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that was kind of. Oh, yes.
But another thing I liked about this movie is like I liked how everyone is just constantly in everyone else's shit.
Yeah.
Like in a way that it's like this block is your family. You can never get away from them. Like you walk outside, they're outside.
Right.
You say something, they hear it. Mm-hmm. It's like you are connected whether you want it or not. And like you just have to. And again, that's what makes you go crazy. Like everyone's making each other crazy,
right?
You know,
and there's the queen mother up in her window watching everything. Mm-hmm. You know, she sees everything,
but she only yells at the drunk.
Yeah, she only yells at the drunk. She won't.
Go ahead.
I'm kind of glad about it. I started thinking about it. Like, why isn't there any like drugs or anything in this neighborhood? I was like, okay, we don't need it.
Plus, I mean, it's like, I mean, this is like 10 a.m. to 10 p.m., right?
Right.
So, no, I mean, you have the mayor.
He's drunk.
Drunk-ass mayor, right? Mm-hmm. The mayor. And he's, that's enough, right?
Like, he's a decent guy. He just goes around. Yeah, we don't need it.
And even him, like, we get that speech where he's like, you don't know what it's like to, like, see your family. And then they yell, well, I would never be like that.
Right.
It's like, you're on that path, buddy. Like, you're sitting here doing nothing all day.
Right. You're going to have kids and you're not going to take care of them. Because that's what you do.
That's what this place, you know, creates if you don't get out, right? If you're not like Mookie trying to make that money and get out, right?
I think that's what Spike has always been about, was like, you know, nobody's going to give you anything. You don't deserve it, for one thing. You got to go out and do the work.
Yeah.
You know.
Easy to say when you're a genius.
Don't bitch and moan if you're not doing anything.
Easy to say when you're a genius.
Yeah. Yeah, he's had a pretty good career. Mm-hmm. Yeah, seats, you know, front row seats at sporting events.
Right. Speaking of that, one moment in this movie caught my ear where they're talking about, like, so the whole conflict starts with bugging out, saying, why there's no black people on the wall? Which is a stupid fucking thing. That's like, I mean, again, the parallels to modern day, it's like, why is this school named after Abraham Lincoln? You know, come on.
Right.
Stupid argument. Anyway, he's pissed off about it. He's like, you could have, and he starts listing all these black people. He's like, Michael Jordan. I was like, man, that must have killed Spike Lee to write that. he could have said, he could have said Patrick Ewing, but no, he put in Jordan, and that must have killed him. I like that.
I think he did it on purpose.
Of course, he's willing. He's willing to do it, right?
Yeah, yeah. He's so, you know, everyone, you know, somebody else from New York go, but Patrick Ewing. Yeah. Nobody knows that, you know, compared to Michael Jordan, that's, he's the king. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Another, yeah, another stupid, stupid argument.
I don't know, man. I think we've run this down pretty thoroughly.
Okay. I've enjoyed it.
Anything else you want to say before we guess the score?
No, you got to see it. I believe it's if Spike Lee has a masterpiece, this is it. So, I think, and it's and it holds up as well as any, you know, 30-year-old movie should.
33-year-old movie.
33-year-old.
Yeah, and this was, yeah, I don't know. Dead Poets Society, that's, I don't know. I mean, they're different movies.
I'll have to watch that again. I've only seen it once.
It's different, right? Like, yeah. If you're like, I want a movie that's making a big statement, that's not Dead Poets Society. Mm-hmm. But, like, Dead Poets Society's a coming-of-age story. It's got a different vibe, you know? So, it's just different. But this one is more like, I mean, it's literally in your face.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And again, budget, $6.5 million. Gross worldwide, $37
million. Yeah.
So.
Spike can afford those seats now.
So... Spike's making that change. Oh, we think about the IMDb rating, 99,000 people checking in.
7.8?
7.9.
Okay.
We'll take it.
Yeah.
Not quite at that 8 threshold, which is, that again, that rarefied air. Yeah. That's elite. Which, I don't know, is this elite?
I loved it. I was not bored.
I mean, I think it's the second best movie of the year. I mean, of that year. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
because you think Dead Poets Society. Okay, that's
fine. I don't know. Like,
it's a really good movie.
They're different movies. Yeah. It's hard to, like, I mean, I would put them in a tier above, of course, above all the other stuff I mentioned before, right? I mean, it's better than Little Mermaid, but Little Mermaid's important to me, at least.
Yeah.
All right, Rotten Tomatoes got, 99 reviews.
I'll go 96.
93.
Okay.
A little low.
Yeah.
Audience, 50,000 people checking in.
89.
Nailed it.
Oh.
89. Uh-huh. See if I can find a negative review here. Yeah, this is from a place I've never heard of. Sight and Sound. This is from 2020.
Oh, yeah, it's a magazine.
Is it? Okay. Magazine. It's 2020. So again, I think the negative ones are going to be from now. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, contextualizing or not, what can I say, like using today's context to explain it. For all its apparent roughness, Do the Right Thing is aesthetically very sophisticated, particularly in the first half, but at the end it collapses both aesthetically and politically. I wonder what that means. Aesthetically, whatever, that's arguable, but it collapses politically. I think your reading on the end is that it's good, right? That it ends in a way that shows that they don't actually really hate each other. Like, they like each other, but they're caught up. And it's just like,
a moment.
Yeah.
Which we have in our lives.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, I don't think... what do they want?
I don't know.
You know, yeah, somebody from 2020 wants to hate everybody?
Do you want Sal's to burn down? And you want Moogie to punch him in the face? Or do you want Sal to punch him in the face? Like, what would be the satisfying and realistic ending there? I don't know that there's anything more than them, like, looking at him and be like, fuck you, oh, god damn it. Bye, you know, see ya.
Yeah, my sense was that Sal's going to rebuild when he gets the check.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's his neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. All right, here's the consensus. Smart, vibrant, and urgent without being didactic, Do the Right Thing is one of Spike Lee's most fully realized efforts and one of the most important films in the 1980s.
I think so.
Yeah, not a bad one.
Nope.
So, we are going to continue our Oscar F-ups with...
Well, I know Life is Beautiful didn't win. What did win? I can't remember now.
Shakespeare in Love.
Which is fine. It's funny. But there was better movies that year, which were called...
American History X, Saving Private Ryan...
My favorite was just A Thin Red Line. So, but we're going to do Life is Beautiful because I've never seen it.
Truman Show?
The Truman Show was really good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, yeah, so we'll do Life is Beautiful and I just said it.
Yeah, Shakespeare in Love.
Shakespeare in Love, okay.
Okay.
All right, peace.
Bye.
He's a Philistine.
What's a Philistine?
It's a guy who doesn't care about books or interesting films and things.
Then I'm a Philistine.
No, you're interested in books and things.
No, I'm a Philistine.
You've been shitting in my yard.
I have not.
You want me to hold the chicken, huh?
I want you to hold it between your knees.
So, Jane, what you do here in effect is count boners.
It's fun.